Good morning. It's a great joy to be with you today and to know that Carl's having a great time at Paint Branch. My association with the Frederick congregation goes back a ways. John Morehouse and I were in the same graduating class at Meadville Lombard and shared classes together and had dinners together in Hyde Park way back when. The first time I preached to the Frederick congregation was when you were still in Hood College Auditorium. And I've preached here at least once before and been here for other things, so it feels a bit like home. Carol and Daryl were close friends of mine before they came here from the River Road congregation. I'm blanking on Carol and Daryl's last name. Silkwood, thank you. Daryl was the clarinetist, and Carol a beautiful artist. So, it's good to be with you. A reading from the autobiography of Nelson Mandela titled The Long Walk to Freedom. He wrote, "The policy of apartheid created a deep and lasting wound in my country and in my people. All of us will spend many years, if not generations, recovering from that profound hurt. But the decades of oppression and brutality had another unintended effect, and it was that it produced the Oliver Tambos, the Walter Saluzus, the Chiefs, the Yusuf Dados, the Bram Fishers, men and women of such extraordinary courage, wisdom, and generosity that they're like may never be known again. Perhaps, Mandela writes, it requires such depth of oppression to create such heights of character. It is from these comrades in the struggle that I learned the meaning of courage. I have seen men and women risk and give their lives for an idea. I learned that courage was not the absence of fear, but the triumph over it. I never lost hope that this great transformation would occur. I always knew that deep down, in every human heart, there is mercy and generosity. No one is born hating another person. People must be taught to hate. And if they can learn to hate, then they can be taught to love. For love comes more naturally to the human heart. Even in the grimmest times in prison, when my comrades and I were pushed to our limits, I would see a glimmer of humanity in one of the guards. Perhaps just for a second, but it was enough to reassure me and keep me going. Man's goodness, humanity's goodness, is a flame that can be hidden but never extinguished." The legacy of Nelson Mandela means a lot to the world. It means a lot to South Africa and to Africa and to the United States and to Europe and to individuals and to the children. What was the name of that young man? I'd definitely find him afterwards. Asking what kind of freedom? And then the song that we sang, you know, "I wish I knew how it would feel to be free." And the image of flying like a bird. I can't imagine what it might have been like for Mandela to be in prison for so long. That his whole family grew up, his children grew, and he couldn't see them and be with them. The reason I was in South Africa was important as well, because in my Knoxville congregation there was a couple, a family, that had grown up in white South Africa and had been very active in fighting against the oppression of the blacks in South Africa. And there were people, as Mandela says in his words, that came together and grew courage and worked together across all kinds of boundaries so that freedom can happen, just like happened in this country, just like has happened in other countries around the world, and hopefully will continue to happen in the places where oppression, apartheid living, and various things continue to oppress certain people and keep equality from being real, freedom from being shared. As I contemplate the life and legacy of Nelson Mandela, I resist calling him a hero. I resist putting him on a high pedestal. I resist holding back the truth that he was, among other things, an armed freedom fighter rather than a pacifist. Nelson Mandela's contribution to South Africa and to the world stands out in dramatic relief for many reasons. Like most great historic figures, he was a man defined by the time and place where he came to maturity. He was a man defined by his inheritance, his family roots, and finally he was defined and inspired to rise above the injustice and oppression that was his own life experience. One thing I ask us to think about this morning has to do with the demands of the times and places in which we live. Throughout human history, there has been cruel oppression, legalized injustice, and bone-deep racism. As we look back, I call upon us also to look around. What are the issues in need of truth and reconciliation in our place and time? We live in history. Our liberal faith calls us to respond to the here and now, to this moment, to the needs and challenges of our times. I came across a poem that I wrote several years ago on the 5th anniversary of the war in Iraq, which was a moment in which I became aware of parts of my own history that are still relevant and that are relevant to this question of what are we called to today in this time and place in our generation. I wrote, "In my life, on the day I was born, Jews were still being led to the crematorium. As I walked the halls of my college, President Kennedy was killed in Dallas. While I was teaching in inner city Chicago, Dr. King was killed in Memphis. While I marched to take back the night, women's rights were still denied. While I was ministering in Bethesda, people jumped from the Twin Towers. Even as I write, soldiers and citizens are dying, prisoners are tortured, unjust war continues. And yet, during tragic times and horrific loss, human hope survives. In protest, in outrage, in silence, in suffering, in compassion, in prayers for peace and justice, human hope survives." Throughout our lives, there is an historical thread of violence, oppression, and inequality. And throughout our lives, there is also an historical thread of movements for freedom and justice. Many of you, many of us, all of us have been a part of those movements. Some of us here today were involved in the anti-apartheid movement of the 60s and 70s. The whole world was involved. We lobbied in support of boycotting products from South Africa, and we remember the horrifying photographs of the Sharpeville massacre near Johannesburg. We followed the arrests, the trials, and the unjust sentencing of Nelson Mandela and others of the ANC, the African National Congress. Some of us here today were not yet born in those years, but all of us are aware of the sacrifices and accomplishments of Mandela. And many of us celebrated when he was released from prison on February 11, 1990. And we continued to celebrate in 1994 when Nelson Mandela became South Africa's first democratically elected president. He was 75 years of age. All of us were saddened by his death this past December at the age of 95. In his autobiography, Mandela writes about the day he walked out of prison and into the crowd of reporters and television crews and supporters. As he walked out of prison, he wrote these words later about that day. "When I was among the crowd, I raised my right fist and there was a roar. I had not been able to do that, to raise my fist in solidarity for 27 years. And it gave me a surge of strength and joy. We stayed among the crowd for a few moments before jumping into the car for the drive to Cape Town. Although I was pleased to have such a reception, I was greatly vexed by the fact that I did not have a chance to say goodbye to the prison staff. As I finally walked through the gates to enter a car on the other side, I felt, even at the age of 71, that my life was beginning anew. My 10,000 days of imprisonment were over. Can you believe it? Mr. Mandela felt remiss in not saying goodbye to the prison staff. This brief paragraph lifts up for me one of the basic qualities of a good leader, of a good person, the quality of humility. How else but out of humility could Mandela have survived his incarceration and at the end been strong enough in spirit to successfully negotiate the ending of apartheid with de Klerk, the president of the country at that time, the same man who had kept him in prison all those years? How else but with humility could Mandela have taught other prisoners to read while out in the hot sun at the quarry on Robben Island? When my son and I, we were visiting because the family that were members of our church in Knoxville moved back, first to England and then to South Africa after a tragic loss. Graham's wife took her own life. And he went back to be with his family to help him raise his two children. And he met and fell in love a few years later and was getting remarried and invited me, his minister, to come and officiate his wedding in South Africa. And my son and I visited Robben Island. And they take you on a tour. You get on a little bus and they take you to the quarry and they take you around the island and they take you through the prison and you see the cell where Mandela spent all those years, a very small cell. All the guides at the prison were former prisoners. And they spoke about Mandela and what it was like to live alongside him. Only a humble man could have elicited such pride in others. Nelson Mandela carried humility like an inner light. Humility is a spiritual virtue. The word is from the Latin, humilitas, meaning lowliness, meekness. Humility does not mean undervaluing yourself. It means valuing others. Writer Jonathan Sacks writes that humility signals an openness to life's grandeur and the willingness to be surprised, uplifted by goodness wherever one finds it. Humility is to see the good in others and be uplifted by goodness wherever you find it. Mr. Mandela found goodness even in the prison guards. Humility is the willingness to be open to and admire something greater than yourself. Humility does not mean undervaluing yourself. Within community, humility comes from the most human of moments, not when we are approaching perfection, but when we see wholeness shining through the broken places. Sometimes we think humility is about being small. It's not. It's about seeing goodness everywhere, in all the broken places of our lives. To be an activist, to be an idealist, to risk your life so others can have justice, it is essential to see the light and the wholeness even in the darkest times. As I've thought about Mandela's legacy, I've also thought about another great activist who died recently, Pete Seeger. It seems a strange pairing, but at the moment, they died a month apart. Another humble man, Pete Seeger. Another one who saw the wholeness in life and the goodness in others. Both Mandela and Seeger were men of power, men who grew old and yet retained their inner light and used that light to shine a light on others. Mandela was born in Africa on July 18, 1918. Pete Seeger was born in America on May 3, 1919. Mandela's father was a Tembo chief and leader of his people. Pete Seeger's father was a musicologist and his mother a musician. Mandela died on December 5, 2013, at age 95. Seeger died on January 27, 2014, at age 94. Both men responded to the call of history, using their formidable talents to make a difference for good in their respective countries. Both were called traitors by their government. Mandela because of challenging apartheid, Seeger because he refused to answer the charges of the House Un-American Activities Committee. Nelson was jailed, Pete was blacklisted. Neither gave up. Music of the people was instrumental in both of their lives. The African drumming and dancing inspired courage during the protests in Soweto. Folk songs inspired the peace movement in America. There's a great quote by Pete Seeger. He says, "There is something about the power of participating. It is almost my religion. If the world is still here in 100 years, people will know the importance of participating, not just being spectators." Pete Seeger's concerts were always sing-alongs. You couldn't help yourself, and that was what he wanted. Everyone to participate, everyone to sing along, to feel the power of the gathered voices, to feel the power of the words of peace and freedom. Have any of you ever been to a Pete Seeger concert? You get this influx of power. Pete would sing a line and then ask the audience to sing a line with him. Even when he got very old and his voice got very weak and scratchy, he would sing a line and he would ask you to respond with the same line. It had the same effect as any spiritual sung in call and response, any prayer offered as call and response. The participation of many voices created community. The 1,000 or so people at a concert felt like family. Music is a universal good. Music heals. Music humanizes. After the negotiations that ended apartheid, after free and democratic elections resulted in the presidency of Nelson Mandela, after all the bloodshed and hatred, came the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, a humanitarian choice that grew out of great tragedy. It was an unprecedented attempt at healing a nation. President Mandela named then Archbishop Desmond Tutu as chairman of that commission. Tutu's voice was strong when he asserted that true reconciliation cannot be achieved by denying the past. The work of the commission could be no simple platitude of forgiveness, but a bold spirituality that recognized the horrors people had inflicted on one another. And yet the commission retained a sense of idealism about what forgiveness was possible. The commission was not a criminal court. It was not established in order to punish or prove guilt. It was established as a way of listening to people's experiences during the horror that was apartheid. It was a way of hearing the wounds on both sides of the racial and power divide. It was a way to reclaim humanity for all. I wonder how things might be different in our country today if we had had ways to have truth and reconciliation commissions here throughout these years of pain and woundedness. It was meant as a way to reclaim humanity for everyone. As all participants realized that our humanities are intertwined. Ubuntu, what dehumanizes you dehumanizes me. What humanizes me humanizes you. This was restorative justice at a national level on an international stage. It was a spiritual experience of moral healing. I encourage you to read about it if you have not. As Desmond Tutu wrote, theology helped us in the Truth and Reconciliation Commission to recognize that we inhabit a moral universe, that good and evil are real, and that they matter. This is a moral universe, which means that there is no way that evil and injustice and oppression and lies can have the last word. This is a moral universe, and truth will out. The world is now and will always be in need of truth and reconciliation. The world will always need those who carry light and goodness as their moral compass. The world will always need music to bring healing. The world will always need men and women who lead in the ways of peace. Men and women like Nelson Mandela and Pete Seeger. We were blessed to have lived to know their works. Let us carry on peace and justice in our time. So may it be. Amen.